The mirror has been an object of fascination for more than 3,000 years. From the earliest recorded discovery of its optical effects in China, the mirror, along with related concepts such as the shadow and the double, became a primary image in the traditions, art, and literatures of countless cultures, appearing in the form of a looking glass, window pane, or reflective pool. The mirror was familiar both at home and in nature, yet its seemingly magical ability to capture the semblance of a thing and reflect it led to the view of the mirror as a mystical, supernatural, and often demonic object. As such, it became a stock motif of folk tales and fairy tales throughout the world. Despite long-standing scientific theories of reflection, the function of the mirror was shrouded in mystery for centuries. Ancient misunderstandings about the mirror's physical properties quickly secured it a prominent position in folk superstition. As mirrors became customary in households across Europe, they also became more prevalent in literary fairy tales, assuming various uncanny qualities. Stith Thompson's Motif Index of Folk Literature cites virtually innumerable instances of mirrors, some with clairvoyant and transforming abilities, others that serve as doorways to fantastic realms, or those that are directly linked to the soul. The diversity of these motifs chronicles the ever-malleable and mysterious essence of the mirror. That from the Greenwood Encyclopedia of Folk Tales and Fairy Tales. It may just be the mirror, mirror on the wall that drew us into fairy tales when we were tots, and it may just be the perfectly placed mirror that pulls us in, not only to the exhibition, but to a journey, an adventure even, past precious pearls and perhaps a sample of Rapunzel's lovely locks. It's Wolves, Magic Mirrors, and Spinning Wheels, the current show at the Everhart Museum in Scranton, drawing on the museum's wide-ranging collection of scientific and historic artifacts, coupled with works by contemporary artists, telling and retelling tales and illustrating ways in which fairy and folk tales inspire us in each and every generation. Neshka Pfeiffer is curator of the show, and Dawn McGurl is the Everhart's marketing coordinator. They paid a visit to the WVIA studios to talk with us about the show. Neshka Pfeiffer.
Wolves, Magic Mirrors, and Spinning Wheels, The Anatomy of Fairy Tales, focuses on the fairy tale genre. So you're actually looking at fairy tales, not the very specific tales, but kind of how tales are constructed. So when you're looking at the components of the hero or heroine, the magical objects, the tests, the quest, the magical helpers, you know, witches and so forth, and other types of animals, all of those components actually play symbolic and larger reaching goals in storytelling. So it's not just about, you know, the princess getting her guy and getting the castle at the end. It's really about a journey that a person takes, and they're either coming to know their true self or their true family. And often a lot of the most famous heroes and heroines are actually orphans, you know, looking to be reunited with their original families, or their maybe their actual biological family doesn't treat them well and they end up with their special spiritual family. So you're going through the exhibition starting out on the quest of the fairy tales and learning about, you know, some of the challenges that you might have if you're coming across a dragon and you're looking for treasure, or your finger is pricked by a spinning spindle. So those types of things are what you're learning about when you first enter into the gallery. And then when you sort of start the quest or really sort of get into it, you come into the Enchanted Forest. And the Enchanted Forest is always this liminal place where you are beset by all sorts of challenges, but you're going to be changed by it in a positive way. You know, it's every once in a while you'll have a darker tale where the person doesn't end off so well. But generally, you're presented all these scary opportunities, but in fact, they are turned into successful challenges. And then when you come out, you've accomplished your quest, whatever that is, and you're going to have that experience that you're going to take on with you to the future. So as we go through, or as the visitor goes through the exhibition, not only are they seeing sort of the objects that are related to fairy tales, we have a beautiful series of spinning wheels that are not only ours, but also borrowed from Lackawanna Historical Society, Susquehanna County's Historical Society, and a couple of other objects from Wayne County Historical Society. We have lovely partners and lenders always, but there's all of these wonderful contemporary artists who are interpreting. All of them are working with fairy tale themes in their works. Sometimes they're dark, because fairy tales are actually dark. And one of the key things that I wanted people to think about is, you know, generally the world is actually quite terrible. These stories are not meant to warn us of the terrors. They're basically to give us some guidelines that we can conquer our terrors, whatever they are. And I'm paraphrasing both Neil Gaiman and G.K. Chesterton. You know, fairy tales are about finding out how to conquer the bogey or the boogeyman, not so much that the boogeyman exists. We all know that they do. So, and there's some really also terrible aspects to stories. I mean, fathers wanting to marry their daughters and mothers wanting to kill their sons. I mean, and, you know, we know that these types of terrible things can actually happen. So as you move forward and you realize that you will meet interesting and good people or good creatures, you know, and often the creatures that you're meeting have very specific symbolic attributes. So when you're meeting a fox, it's always kind of the clever trickster that is going to be giving you advice. And if you don't follow it, you're probably not going to end up well, because they kind of have the secrets of how things turn out. Often when you meet a wolf, the wolf was quite demonized as a result of Christianity and became a symbol of bestial, like desires. And so often when you see a wolf in, say, Red Riding Hood or in some of the other tales, when the wolf gets vanquished, it also means that you're vanquishing your physical desires. And then you're able to move on and make, ideally, vanquish your emotional desires and your other sort of egoistic desires. And that's sort of how these fairy tales kind of can become kind of spiritual parables. And in fact, linguists have been able to map out their origins, looking at how the first tales were recorded to like the syntax and the diction and all of these different languages. And they've traced them back thousands and thousands of years, you know, pre-religious text times. So via oral tradition, all of these tales have been mutated and changed and handed down, but generally kind of keeping certain elements always there so that those symbolic attachments are always something that you're going to be understanding. But we've lost a lot of that symbolic understanding. So I think this is why people are still continually revisiting fairy tales. And this is, in fact, over my career, the third fairy tale exhibition I've worked on. There's a second at the Everhart, because I think, you know, not just with popular media, with television and movies and so forth, fairy tales are really something that stick in people's consciousness. They're not just for kids. They're not just for girls. They're something that really resonate with people as a whole and around cultures around the world. So why is that? Why? And that was kind of what I was trying to address. And I think that this, you know, a lot of the scholars have come out and said that they mean more than what they are just telling you. So, and I think that's what we're hoping people walk away with when they come through the exhibition.
And what are you hearing from people who have taken that journey with you?
Well, everyone loves the taxidermy. We've had a lot of nice responses to that. We had them spiffed up for the exhibition. The contemporary artists, though, are all addressing really interesting themes. Often some of the women artists are addressing compulsions to beauty rituals or kind of other types of collecting rituals. We have a wonderful section just on hair and hair mourning art and jewelry and so forth. I also feel that one of the key pieces that, in fact, leads you out of the exhibition at the end when you've kind of accomplished your quest, so to speak, is this fabulous installation called Migrations. And it features a woman and a dog. And the woman is a wooden fixture as made up of various wooden parts, as is the dog. And they have porcelain faces painted. But the train of the woman's dress is a collection of chairs. And Kitty Wales created this piece on site at the museum. And the idea is that all of these sections represent stories and things that you hear or participate in through your life. So you'll end up bringing those things with you wherever you go. So because we all are migration-oriented people. I mean, we all are usually moving around. So we're not staying in our place of origin. As a result, we're taking all of those experiences with us in intangible ways. And I think that's what fairy tales do in general for people.
Did you put a call out for artists? How did you get this group of contemporary creative people?
A couple of the artists I've actually worked with before. So some of them are reappearing in this show because they were interested in fairy tale themes in their work. And I know I just have a really great connection of artists that I've looked for or I've come across in other things. And I do have one or two other curatorial friends who are very well connected with other artists. And so they actually suggested several artists, particularly the slew that are from New England that we have in the show. So it's all basically a question of connections. And also, I wanted all of the artists to be revisiting themes that kind of show conflict in stories. So that's something that, you know, because I think that's really what fairy tales are trying to address.
As you've said, Neshka, you've drawn on the extensive holdings of so many different kinds of objects in the museum's collection. It must be quite amazing when you open the doors and venture into the archives to look for a lion or a spinning wheel or who knows what.
Yeah, we have thousands of objects. So it's a number of things. Sometimes it's searching through the inventory that we have, that's, you know, a digital inventory, but sometimes you really do need to look at it and see if it works. So often I'm, literally visually landscaping what our collections are, because sometimes we need to figure out what the condition is and all that sort of thing too. So yeah, it's very much just, and sometimes it just helps to see it to give you the inspiration. And that's kind of what happened for the show that we're planning for next year.
Dawn, as someone sitting at the table who didn't curate the show.
But I do love it.
Tell me some of the things that stand out and caught your attention.
That's a really good question. It's a very different experience because it does pull so many different aspects of fairy tales and your own personal experience through them. So I think that answer would be different for every person, obviously, that goes through there. But there's some really beautiful textile pieces in the exhibit. The one that came from, was it Hermès in France?
Yes, the Big Beast Boutique installation.
Really, that's really something to see. You know, you look at it, there's so much there to pull out. And I'm not always a huge fan of like modern art per se or installations in general, but specifically this one is really fascinating. It's just so different. There's something in that exhibition for every person's sensibility. Everything that will catch your eye, things that will speak to you. It's really well done that way. You know, if you're into the whole symbolic animal piece of fairy tales, there's so much there and there's so much to read. It's just, you know, it's really well done. There's jewels in our exhibit, which is one of my faves. I have to be honest with you. I hope my husband is listening, but which is a lovely piece and talks about the symbolism of what each of them means, pearls and rubies and emeralds and all of that, which is wonderful. The artwork itself though is beautiful. Some beautiful paintings. One of my favorites is the paperwork.
Jody Harvey creates these. She takes a subject book, like say, for example, Hans Christian Andersen's fairy tales, and then has, in fact, sculpts out of the pages The Little Mermaid.
The actual book. It's wonderful. We have the Red Riding Hood, Little Mermaid, and there's another piece.
There's
there.
A castle.
Right.
And
those are fantastic. They're really great. I love the mirror. Just seeing yourself when you go into the exhibition at the end of one of the rooms of one of the galleries is a mirror. So you're seeing yourself reflected in all of what you see around you in fairy tales, which I think is fantastic. It's a really great experience for kids and for adults. And we're hoping that, especially over the holiday season when you're looking for something to do, that this is a wonderful time to either come back to the Everhart or visit it on a regular basis. If you're a regular visitor, come and see this if you haven't caught it already.
I know that people are putting on virtual reality glasses and things like this, but we're right there with objects and things that we might see ordinarily in our lives, but in a different context.
My background is theater, so that's so important to have that you're there. That's why I said it'll be different for every person that's in there, because you're putting yourself into this exhibition. So it's really awesome. I think more and more people need to come back to museums for that very reason, so that you can experience these things in person as opposed to photographs or watching blogs. Or the Met has some great pieces online about their exhibitions, which is fantastic if you can't get there, but you have a museum in your own backyard. So, you know, really come and have that experience, that personal one-on-one, seeing those objects up front.
And you really sort of understand how they work in the space that they're in, you know, because that's the thing about photographs. Like, you don't really get a sense of the sort of the depth and the kind of the 360-degree view that you can get when you see something in person. And I think, you know, even when the internet first started and museums really started capitalizing on kind of the digital views of their collections, people were afraid visitation would go down. If anything, it's actually gone up, even with all the problems of the economy and stuff. I mean, people still kind of want these real experiences. So virtual reality, of course, is something people are interested in. But when you come, you can actually get a sense of what it would be like to have a lion sort of staring
True.
You in the face.
No, you know, because we have pictures this fabulous of eagles, but until you see how big that bird really is right in front of you, it's really very different.
Yeah, or a deer or a wolf.
Mm-hmm.
Or...
You often have ancillary activities and ancillary exhibitions. Are there such?
Yes, we also have an exhibition right now called Fairy Tale Remix, which was a community call where artists of all ages submitted works in which they reconfigured a fairy tale, took the components, you know, like as I was describing earlier, but also kind of reorienting them and creating kind of a different fairy tale on their own. So they created artworks that represented those stories. And then not associated with that specifically, but earlier this spring, we created an exhibition to feature John Willard Rott, our Impressionist painter that we have in the collection. And we are happy to announce that the show's been extended because so many people have been so enthralled with seeing his work again. I mean, we always have some of his pieces on view, but the fact that we've pulled out a whole slew from storage and we have lenders that have lent, you know, 20 some odd works as well, and they all very graciously extended the loan too. So it'll be on view until early in the spring. So that is something that people keep coming back to see too. So we're really lucky that right now the subject matter is resonating with our visitors.
And there is a wonderful sense of continuing to want to reach out to the community. And Dawn, you were talking about extended hours. What's going on with that?
Well, we have lots of changes coming to the museum, and we want to engage our community. So often, at least in my experience, I hear people say, I haven't been there since I was in third grade, or the last time I was there is when I took my children when they were young. And we really want people to come there and own the museum again, be a part and engage themselves with the museum. So as a part of that, we are relaunching our gift shop. We have already done that, and that has been running splendidly. So what we want now is to just have opportunities for people to come and shop in our gift shop. That's one way to have people come in. That's just a gateway to getting into the museum. They can come in. We have extended hours till 7 o'clock on several days. On Thursday, December 15th, we're going to be hosting a night at the museum. On that evening, Duffy's Coffee House will be outside. We're trying to capitalize on having people in the park to see the Christmas lights. So when you're in the park, if you're riding around, stop and come on into the museum and see what we have to offer. We are also, during the week between Christmas and New Year's, the 26th through the 31st, it'll be a buy one, get one free admission. So if you have family in, you have your kids, you're looking for something to do when they're off from school, come on in during regular museum hours, and we're offering that special. So we're really hoping that we can engage the community again and have them come in and say, this is a place to be. We want to be a destination, not just an afterthought. Oh, I forgot about this. We have the museum. Come on in.
Dawn McGurl, Marketing Coordinator at the Everhart Museum, Neshka Pfeiffer, Curator at the Museum, and Curator of this show that we learned about, and that's Wolves, Magic Mirrors, and Spinning Wheels, The Anatomy of Fairy Tales, now through December 31st at the Everhart Museum in Scranton-Naog Park. You can find them on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and their website address is everhart-museum.org. And Everhart is spelled E-V-E-R-H-A-R-T, everhart-museum.org. As we heard from Dawn, this Thursday, December 15th, it's a night at the museum between 4 and 7. The museum will be open late for you to spend a relaxing evening exploring the museum and this exhibit we heard about, doing some holiday browsing in their newly revamped gift shop and enjoying caroling on the museum steps. The Dunmore High School Show Choir will be on hand, and that's all this Thursday, 4 to 7. And if you need to check the website, it's everhart-museum.org, everhart-museum.org. And you can learn more about Wolves, Magic Mirrors, and Spinning Wheels, The Anatomy of Fairy Tales, now through December 31st at the Everhart Museum, Naog Park in Scranton.